Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Thought I'd just make a few concluding comments that reflect things that we've come to believe in and how we try to practice disciple making. And this has been a journey that Judy and I have been on. As she mentioned, we were in a really unique church in the Chicago area. We started small groups back in the 60s, and hardly anybody was doing that at that time. We started this congregation that met in a shopping center, met first in a house. We started with 10 adults. And in about a year and a half, it grew really rapidly to several hundred people, and God was doing marvelous things at that time. And I remember one Sunday morning, I asked people to stand after about a year and a half, and there were probably 200 or 250 people there. And I said, would those of you who have become a Christian through this church stand up? And about 70% of the people stood. And it was this kind of thing that really drove Judy and myself to realize the need for discipleship and training others. And one of the first things I did was begin to get a group of men together and disciple them for eldership, because we were going to need other leaders right away in that church. And God provided a few, and then we've gone on from there. So we all know Matthew 28, go and make disciples throughout the world. You know, you all know the phrase, disciples are made, they're not born. So there's a making process that goes on, and the big question is, how do we make disciples? And to me, the greatest model that I know of is Jesus' model. He selected 12 men, and his way of making disciples is a profound and a lifelong study. I can tell you that from experience. I don't have all the answers yet. I'm still studying this process that Jesus laid out before us. But I know two things. Number one, he was the founder. He's the one who originated it and established the first church. And how did he do it? By making disciples. And he gave us a model. He gave us a plan. So I think when we take those two things into consideration, he was the founder and he gave us the plan, and we follow that, some really good things can happen. Now, most of us know Matthew 28 and that challenge, go into all the world and make disciples and teach them to obey and observe everything that I have commanded you. But to me, one of the passages of scripture that has emerged as one of the really important ones in understanding what discipleship is Mark chapter 3, and in verses 13, 14, right along that section, we read that Jesus chose 12 men that they might be with him and that he might send them out. So you have those three things there. He chose and he had them be with him, and then there was the expectation that they would go out and reproduce what they had learned from him. The word choose there, he chose 12, or in some translations it says he appointed, is an interesting Greek word. It's one that means to make something. And so even in the choosing process, he was making disciples. And Judy and I have come to believe in that process being really important, of inviting people to be in a group, of actually selecting the people that you want to be a part of what you are doing in building the discipleship ministry and the building of a local church. The word for make can also be translated, he designed, he created, he crafted, he made. And I've often thought about how here he is, God in the flesh, fully God, fully human. And at one time, before anything he existed, he started creating, and he started making. So he's been creating and making things for a long time, right? Even from before the foundation of the world. And then I try to picture him in that carpenter's shop, and I've often thought, I would love to see the furniture that he built. What would that have looked like? But he uses these very same words that are used in bringing the material world into existence. And the very things that he did as he worked in a laboring way in his carpenter shop, and begins to apply it to this whole idea of making disciples, of turning us into something. Another term that could be used to describe this is art piece. He was making an art piece. And we're told how he did it. Luke tells us he went up on a mountain and he prayed during the night. And then he came down the next day, and that's when he chose these 12 men. Now, we have to remember there were multitudes that had been following him. We read about the 120. We read about the 70. And so here were all these groups of people. And as we heard yesterday, and I think we heard the day before, he could have just said, hey, I'm going to have this big, spectacular ministry. I'll wow them with my miracles. I'll get a lot of followers. But that isn't what he did. And as Judy said, he had a plan. We call it plan A. There was no plan B. And he picked a small group of men, and he began to pour himself into them. And I like to think about this, because think of who he picked for that group. This is going to entail some work. And we found out when you get groups of people together, sometimes you get surprised by the personalities that are involved and the baggage that they bring with them, the things that they do. And so the Gospels actually give descriptions of these people to us. And one of the first ones we find out about is a guy named Simon the Zealot. These zealots were Jewish nationals who actually took vows to assassinate their opponents. Jesus picks this man. And then he's got James and John, the sons of thunder, who really had no problem about stepping to the front and say, hey, I'm your man. And when they were talking about going into the kingdom, they argued over who's going to sit on Jesus' right hand and his left hand. Maybe some egos involved here. And then they bring in, Jesus chooses Matthew, this tax collector who works for the Roman government. How do you think Simon the Zealot felt about that? So you bring all these people together and you begin to work with him. And Jesus truly did turn this into an art piece. This was his work, molding the lives of these men and teaching them how to love each other and to have unity, and how to get along, and how to carry this work forward in the world. It's a marvelous, marvelous picture that we have. Jesus is the master disciple maker. And he worked with people. He took them where they were, and some of them had a long journey to take. But he worked with every one of them. He made them a part of his group, and he poured himself into them. So, when we read there that Jesus chose, there was some real significance in this choosing process. When we go about choosing people for our groups, there are three qualities, basically, that we look for. Are they eager? Are they teachable? And are they available? And when I invite men to be in a group that I do, and I usually have six men in a group, and I also work with them for 2 to 2.5 years, and it's relational, it's theological, we cover all kinds of things. We take road trips together. I go visit other people. If Jim lived close to me, I'd take them and let them visit him and let him talk to them. We've gone to Wheaton and visited Jerry Root and had him talk about discipleship. We've gone to Notre Dame University, talked to Mark Knoll, the historian, have guys read his books, and they get to sit and ask questions directly of him. So we do all kinds of things together. There's a togetherness in this thing that we do. But people have to make a commitment to this. And so I always have them write a letter, if they say yes, as to why they want to be in the group. And then when we meet the first time, we all read our letters. And we go around and we all get to hear each other. And so we get to know each other and we see the passion that people have. So this becomes an important thing. So then we have that second word, that they would be with him. And there is a real challenge to those of us who enter into this enterprise of making disciples. Am I worth being with? Okay. am I worth being with? So that's a call to me to spend time with Jesus, right? And to develop that relationship. So I've got to be the kind of person that's worth being with. And so Jesus called them to walk with him through the countryside. He saw them work, they saw him work the miracles. They sat and he taught them. And all these wonderful things were going on. I just want to emphasize this importance of relationship in the context of the modern culture in which we live in, which is so characterized by technology. Technology has a lot of wonderful uses, but there's something it cannot accomplish, and that is the beauty of this withness. Michael Horton, the theologian, wrote a book called Ordinary. I don't know how many of you have seen it or read it. I read it this past year. It's one of the best books I read this past year. And he has this, I take this out of his book. He says, there are plenty of terrific ways in which the social media connect us, but calling any of these communities seems like a lot of hyperbole, make-believe. Community requires coherence, cohesion, and consensus over time, and depending on the type of community, across the spatial boundaries, across space as well. Unlike internet connections, deep community requires face-to-face embodied engagement and accountability. You can't just unfriend your next-door neighbor, much less your spouse or your children, without daily repercussions. You just can't do it. There's a power in relationship. And then the last thing is that he might send them out. Now this kind of brings me to the last thing that I'd like to emphasize, and so I need to get back over here. And stay out of the light there. This is an approach we followed in disciple making. I think a lot of disciple making that we conceive in our churches today is remedial. We have churches full of people who've never been discipled. And so we step in and we start working with them, which is necessary, and we have to do that. But when Jesus told these men to go and make disciples, who did they have to start with? There was nobody else out there. So it required pre-evangelism, making contact with unbelievers, and we read of Jesus eating and drinking with sinners. We find him in the marketplace. We find him going out where sinners are. And one of the things I think most of us discover, if we've been Christians for any period of time, we begin to lose contact with non-Christians. And I think the statistic is after 2 years, we basically have no friendships with non-Christians. I learned the idea of pre-evangelism from Francis Schaeffer. That's the first time I ever heard that term. And that means maintaining contact with non-Christians. And then after a period of time, we move into evangelism, then conversion, the formation process, and the reproduction. It said Jesus chose 12 that they might be with him, that he would send them out. And there's reproduction. And I know I've become a disciple maker when I reproduce people who go and do the same thing all over again. Now, you've heard that all week long, and it's easier said than done, but this has to be a goal that we have. The key words are love God, love one another, love your neighbor, love your enemies. The key word in discipleship is love. If I were to pick one word that is to characterize our life in discipleship, it's loving people. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love one another. 150 times the term one another is used in the New Testament. We are a one another kind of people, and we have to learn to love one another. That's what Jesus was teaching these men in bringing them from various backgrounds. And then love your neighbor. Most likely, when he said that, he's not talking about Christians. He's talking about just people in generally, mostly non-Christians. And that word neighbor is an interesting word. It's a Greek word which in its verb form means who's next or who's nearest. Who's next? Who's nearest? And when the Good Samaritan walked down the road and found the man laying there, he was nearest to him. When I'm sitting in a restaurant, it's the guy at the next table who may be the next. He may be the nearest. So it's not just the guy who lives next door. Neighbor is a word of acceptance of people. And then finally, love your enemies. And that's what Jesus' disciples were finding even among themselves. There were people with varying opinions. They could even have been enemies. And through this love, he's going to bring us all together. Now, one last thing, and I've got to quit. These are just a list of names. Look at them, and anybody want to take a stab at who they might be or what they might have in common? Some have. Yes, that is the case. We got to move here and quit. So let me just tell you, these are all our neighbors. These are Judy's and my neighbors that we've had over the years. And I could tell you a story about every one of them. Ed Wilkinson down here was a guy I did pre-evangelism with by playing racquetball. Vince and Peggy near the bottom were people we camped with. Almost all of them we had in our home. And some of them we knew for a year, year and a half, before they ever became believers. But it goes back to this idea of spending time with non-believers and doing pre-evangelism. I've got a picture of some of them here. And the guy that you see in the top there, in the middle, has gone home to be with the Lord. He was our neighbor who lived across the street. And we were trying to get to know him. And he was a single man, had gone through some really hard times in his life. And Judy invited him to our house on a holiday. And he'd just had hernia surgery, I think it was. And he came over, he says, I have to lie on the floor. Is that okay? We got out and we laid on the floor with him. And our kids doted on him. And after a period of time, Dave became a believer. The guy right below him, Brad Willey, he and his wife moved in across the street from us about 3 years ago, and within 2 weeks we had them over for dinner. And my big goal as a pastor is to try to not let people know what I do. And we just asked them questions all night long. They came at about 5:30 or 6, stayed till 10:30 that night. And we had a great time just getting to know each other. And then after it was over, he emailed me on Monday and he said, how about coffee next week? I said, my back porch, 9 o'clock. He was there. And we started talking. Then he started opening up and sharing his story. We get on, he says to me, how about coffee next Saturday? We meet next Saturday on his back porch. And about 8 months later, Brad becomes a believer. And him telling his testimony is a wonderful thing. He spends most of his time now discipling his boys. He has two boys, one in college and one in high school. So I just want that idea of pre-evangelism, evangelism, and working down to reproduction, I think is a very important thing to keep in mind. And I would like to see us, I'd give you a project. How would you do pre-evangelism? What are some of the things that you could be doing to make that a reality?